We arrive here today to debate at social distances from each other.
There's no doubt that the old politics of the two-party system is now gone and over.
An equal partnership, there would have to be a parity of esteem, and we'd have to work in partnership together.
We're very reluctant to say what's red lines, but we do have to take climate seriously.
There's going to be constant criticism, there's going to be a lot of disappointment, and whoever goes into government is going to be unpopular. Okay.
Hello, I'm Maggie Doyle. You're very welcome to this week's Your Politics podcast with Sandra Hurley and Aislinn Kenny of our political staff. And also joining us in the politician's chair this week, it is, I feel like there should be some sort of drum roll or something, Social Democrats TD for Cork South West, Holly Cairns, who happens to be the first female politician in the chair this particular series of the Your Politics. You're very welcome, Holly.
Thank
you very much indeed for joining us. We'll go straight into the fact that you're no stranger to podcasts because you actually have your own podcast, which is called Inside the Chamber, and that began last year when you first became a councillor in Cork.
That's right. So actually we were only talking about this podcast the other day when we were talking about we need to get the podcast back up and running. So basically what we did was we would give people an inside track into how local government works and doesn't work in some situations. And it just became so popular and people have been asking, we need the podcast back. And luckily we can keep the name Inside the Chamber.
Yeah, because it still works.
Yeah. And then I was thinking, you need a new intro. Because the last one was like, hi, I'm Councillor Holly Cairns. It was a bit wooden. And I was saying, and I wanted an intro like the Europolitics podcast. We just have different sound bites. So I thought I'd take a bit from the McClifford podcast where he's like, if Holly Cairns took a seat in Cork South West, it would be the mother and father of all election shocks. And then go to Geraldine Harney in the County Centre saying, the biggest shock of this constituency is that
fantastic. You know. You've got it. You've already got the production values down, so you're sorted. So will we be expecting the Holly Cairns Inside the Chamber podcast to be back up and running then in September?
Next week.
Oh, next week.
Yeah, we'll have our next episode out next week.
Exciting.
Season 2.
Exciting. Season 2 starts.
Inside the Dole Chamber.
Inside the Dole Chamber. Very good. Going back, I suppose, then to you getting your council seat in 2019. You know, you're a new politician, as it were. You joined the Social Democrats. But your sort of background is that you're a very strong environmentalist. You've a very strong sort of green policy approach. You come from a farming background. You're a horticulturist. But so why not join the Green Party then instead of the Social Democrats?
I get asked that a lot. And I think one of the biggest problems in Irish politics is that an awful lot of us inherit our vote. So it's a Fianna Fáil family, Fine Gael family. And I suppose historically, I think my dad's side were Fianna Fáil, my mum's side were Fine Gael. My mum was in the Green Party. So I was very wary of not inheriting my vote. And I really, like, I was such a swing voter. I looked into every single party. There's a kind of quiz you can do online that you sort of answer all these abstract questions that tells you where you align. There's so many reasons that I chose Social Democrats. Obviously, I'm massively motivated by climate change and the need for climate action. But nothing would be more important in that transition than social democracy, in my opinion. So it's not a single issue. And then, you know, having finished school in 2008 during the recession, I almost felt like political parties were like a dirty word. I felt like let down by them. I never thought I'd join one. Never.
Really?
You oh
never,
my God, no.
You weren't in sort of student politics in school or university or anything?
No, not at all. And two of the politicians that really stood out to me from that kind of just watching from afar were Roisin Shortall and Catherine Murphy. They're just such hardworking, honest politicians. And the other thing that I think is a huge problem in Irish politics is the lack of female participation. We talk about representation. Mm. 50% of the population aren't fully represented at local and national level. And I don't believe that it's possible to govern a society that promotes equality if that doesn't exist within your own party. And I do think that oftentimes we see female-dominated industries undervalued, underpaid, all sorts of things. You know, bills about maternity leave coming up all the time. Like, that wouldn't happen if we had more women in politics.
And of course, you're actually in the party now that did so well in the general election because you went from 2 to 6 seats. But actually, the biggest proportion of women TDs compared to all the rest of the parties. So you've got 4 female TDs in your 6 party, in your 6 TD party, which must make you feel pretty good then if gender is you know a big issue for you.
Absolutely, and it's no coincidence that the Social Democrats did return so many female TDs. For example, if you attend a Social Democrats event, there's free childcare at it. You know, you kind of have to practice what you preach in terms of encouraging women to engage in politics.
I don't know if other parties offer that, do they? Or do you know?
I don't think so. Right. From what I've heard, that's anecdotal, okay. Quote me on it. But I think, you know, we can't, even I raised it in the Dáil yesterday, so we see after every election, I remember after this one going on the Tonight Show, and everyone was kind of being like, I wonder why, what is the problem here that we don't have better female participation? And like, it's so obvious. So there's one massive, you know, glaring barrier for women to engage in politics, and that is the lack of maternity leave.
Yeah,
and something I raised yesterday.
You raised it yesterday, and you got a very positive reaction from Taoiseach Micheál Martin, you know, who has been batting off all sorts of, you know, criticisms, I suppose, for the last couple of weeks from various different opposition parties. But actually, he was really very positive to what you said, because you said that the bill basically covering maternity leave for councillors and TDs has lapsed, and you said it was a disgrace that there are only 36 female TDs out of 160. But Micheál Martin said that that it should be provided. He agreed with you. I mean, I can't imagine that a Taoiseach in 2020 would say it shouldn't be provided. So I suppose, you know, we have expected that. But are you hopeful that something will happen here and happen quickly then in terms of maternity benefit? Because, sorry, just remind people, what is the story at the moment? There is none.
There is none. And there's no paternity leave either. And that goes for councillors, senators and TDs. And, you know, it's not surprising, like you say, that Micheál just completely agreed, because, I mean, it would be insane not to. But also it's been really interesting to see the different commentary on this issue since. So it obviously has had big uptake on social media and stuff. And there's other female public representatives who have actual lived experience of going through pregnancy and having children in political life, which I haven't. So that's really important to listen to as well. But I found it really fascinating, because there's some people coming in and saying, no, we don't need maternity leave. That's not feasible. What we need is support in that situation. And I can really understand how you would end up feeling like that. Because even if you've got maternity leave and you've got supports and you've got somebody to stand in and you could, for example, vote remote, it still affects your re-election. Mm. So there's a huge cultural and societal problem there too.
So what have they come up with any ideas then, or, you know,
that it's support needed, support like childcare facilities, all those things. And great, but to say that then, because that's the decision that perhaps some might make, and fair enough, to say that then no female representative should get maternity leave is another whole issue. Like, so it's so interesting.
It's there if you want it, but if you don't, actually, you still have support. So, for example, proper childcare facilities here on the campus of Leinster House for everyone to be able to use.
Exactly.
I can't remember, was it... who was it, New Zealand, that there was a female politician who brought the baby into the chamber, or was it Scotland? I can't remember.
It was
now.
New Zealand, the Prime Minister.
Yeah, Jacinda Ardern brought her baby in, which, you know, made headlines across the world.
Yeah, but imagine...
And should it have?
That's where we're at, and it's such a sad state of affairs. But
you can think of some politicians, some female politicians, some well-known ones in the past who actually left politics, citing kind of family reasons. I can think of one straight away, Alwyn Enright, really bright Fine Gaeler, you know, father had been a TD, married to Joe McHugh. And essentially, she kind of ended up staying at home to look after the children. And it just seemed that it was impossible for them to deal with two separate constituencies in different parts of the country. And it feeds into everything that Holly's saying about the difficulties for women, particularly in politics, to balance all the childcare stuff.
And yes, it is a statutory issue. Like, maternity leave is statutory for lots, for all sorts of other organisations and departments and the civil service and, you know, pretty decent maternity leave and benefits. But yet, for the people who run the country, who make decisions, it's not there.
Exactly. And if we want to actually encourage female participation, it has to be addressed. Because if, for example, my main priority was to have a family, I wouldn't have gone for this election, because it would be a logistical impossibility for me to have a family. So until that's actually addressed, we're not encouraging women to engage in politics. We're going to have a problem of a gender imbalance. There's no two ways about it. And it's amazing that we've ended up in a situation where even the elected female reps that we have are saying, no, no, we can't do that. You know, that says it all. Mm. Like, there's so much that needs to be overcome here.
Do you think that that's the only reason, though, for such low participation? I mean, are there other things that put women off entering politics?
And that's why I talk about being massively drawn to the Social Democrats, not just for that reason, but that was certainly one of them. That I think there's institutional problems within big parties. They're very male dominated. And, you know, a quota to get a certain amount of female candidates on a ticket is one thing, but they're not aiming to get those candidates elected. I saw it in loads of constituencies that they say, oh, we need a second candidate in this constituency to sweep up votes in the West or whatever it might be. Mm. But that's what they're there for. They haven't put this out as their candidate to get elected.
Yeah, but they would argue, the bigger parties would argue and say that, look, they've been trying, you know, and that they have, you know, trying to get the gender quota right and it in the right way.
They can argue that all day, but if you put a female candidate on the ticket to meet the gender quota and sweep up candidates for your male one, or votes for your male candidate, that's not trying.
Let's talk about some other things. You were kind of critical of the supports the government has in place for SMEs in the July stimulus in terms of the tourism industry and your own constituency of West Cork, very dependent, I would imagine, and particularly at this time of the year, on the tourism industry. They must be missing out. I mean, how is your constituency doing in terms of getting through the pandemic and getting over the issues that they might have with a lack of tourists? Or are the domestic tourists picking up the slack down there?
There's both. Like, with domestic tourism now that restrictions have lifted a bit is great, but certainly they're still struggling. And it is one of our biggest industries in West Cork. And the kind of support that's been provided, while some of it's welcome, obviously, you know, we'd be critical, but things like it's not targeted support. So like the voucher scheme, for example, is only available to people who can spend money, do without it and claim it back. So it sort of discriminates against a lot of people who won't be able to use it. And then the thing is, like, it's a hospitality sector and it's our tourism sector, but in West Cork and loads of other rural areas, it's so much more than that. So in a town or a village, for example, the hotel relies on tourism to stay going, but it's also oftentimes the biggest provider of employment in the area. It's a kind of community hub. Like, there's nowhere else to have occasions like weddings, funerals, fundraisers, and oftentimes hotels do the fundraisers and stuff for free, and it kind of for the community. Mm. You know, when we see hotels and stuff closing down in areas like West Cork, it devastates the whole community. It's our tourism sector, but it's also our community sector. Mm-hmm. So it has such a far-reaching impact, and I think we really needed more targeted support.
Okay. It's been a very strange year, obviously. So, like, not only were you started off the general election campaign in January, voted in February, pandemic hits March, government formation talks, and now you're back and forth to the convention centre. I was going to ask you, I suppose, to compare local to national politics. In a way, I suppose, is it a bit unfair because it's not like this year has been a norm in the Dáil, but how have you found it? Because you spoke before about local politics getting it, it's hard to get stuff done and to cut through all the, you know, sort of red tape and everything. How have you found it in the Dáil?
I'm continuously fascinated by what is actually the role of politicians, I have to say. Just, and it's that fresh eyes on things. I had no preconceived notions about it. But, you know, with a motivation like, for example, climate action, for example. So you go through a local election, just about managed to get in, albeit by one vote, and realise, like, that's not there's no real action you can take there at the council, you know. In my experience of Cork County Council, public reps had very little to do with the decision-making process. Mm. And at the end of the day, that is your job. So what exactly are they doing? And I think it's the same I'm finding so far. And this is, I have lots more to learn, so perhaps my mind will change on this. But to date, it's confusing for me that you get here, so what can you do? You can ask ministers questions and for the most part not get an answer. You can put in PQs and for the most part not get an answer. There was a situation there last week where we thought we wouldn't even be able to get on certain committees, which would really be your only opportunity to take part in the legislative process. And then you're working in your constituency and somebody, for example, gets in touch with you about a housing need. So here's something I'm confused about. If I write a rep on behalf of somebody for a housing need, if that makes a difference to their chances of getting a house, that's not okay. There's something fundamentally wrong with that. It should be, you know, you're either entitled to a house or you're not. Mm. There's something wrong with politicians being able to pull strings in that way. And if your rep has no impact, then why is everyone wasting their time acting like they get people houses?
And are these things...
A few problems going on.
Are these things
that's interesting because that's what politicians do all the time, TDs. They raise the issue, they write the letter so that they are seen to have done something, to be seen to raise the issue, and they can say to their constituent, I raised it, I made this representation on your behalf. And as you say, there would be something wrong with the process if that was how things were done. So there's something really flawed about that.
So what are we doing? This is the question.
Are these things that you bring up with Catherine and Roisin, like who have a bit more experience in the Dáil, and do you relay your frustrations to them? What do they say?
Yeah, well, like I would totally. Yeah. This is something I've been thinking about loads this week, especially in terms of housing reps and stuff. At the moment, when we meet as parliamentary party, it's like, we need to talk about these amendments. We, you know, we're kind of really busy and flat out, but it's something I'll really look forward to talking to them about, because I know they would agree with me that there's something fundamentally wrong with that process or perception. And I think part of it has to be that when you go through an election and people put their vote in you, something, there's something big in that, and there's a feeling of then wanting to represent them so much and wanting to make them feel like they made a good decision, and therefore trying to make your role something that perhaps it's not, and the feeling of importance, and maybe there's a slight ego issue there too, I don't know. But I think we need perhaps a public awareness campaign about what are people entitled to, and, you know, do you want your TD to do what they're actually supposed to do, which is take part in a legislative process, or do you want them to be super councillors? Mm. And do councillors even have any impact in those things? Like, I'm really confused.
So as it stands now, and it's unfair to ask you this so soon into your first term, but like as Sandra said there, you know, people are, you know, a lot of the time politicians will do this to, I suppose, maybe ensure that they will have a vote the next time around because they've done good for their own constituents and their own people. So would you, looking down the line, and think, well, yeah, I quite like this, I'll do it again in another term, or...?
Run for the election again. Mm. Absolutely.
You would? Yeah. Okay. Despite your caution about it at the moment, as in that you don't really know exactly what you're, what politicians are supposed to be doing.
Well, everyone can take their own approach as well. And I'll be taking my own approach. I think, for one, what's something that's really beneficial of getting involved and doing it is you can sort of relay that to people as well. Like, this is the reality. Mm. That in itself is massively helpful. In a way, if you can't actually take part in the decision making processes, you can do other things like explain that, and that's so important. You know,
also explain it like on a podcast, like now, or your own podcast when it comes out next week.
Exactly. Or question it, like, I'll be a member of the Dáil Reform Committee. I have serious questions for that committee.
I wanted to ask you, are you confident now that farming and things like biodiversity will get proper attention because the Green Party's Pippa Hackett is in the Department for Agriculture, and there is a Green Party person in there? Are you kind of confident?
No.
Or you're not?
I'm not confident. No, I think with all the intentions, like, massive respect for Pippa Hackett, I think she's brilliant. But the programme for government quite clearly sets out that in terms of a reduction of emissions or anything in that sector, that will not happen. So there's a constant reference in general and in this programme for government that they will continue to work towards emission efficiency, which is a completely different thing to the actual overall reduction of emissions. And Ireland is very unique in a European context in that one third of our emissions come from the agriculture sector. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, all we've seen in Irish politics is farmers pitched against environmentalists as if farmers have no stake in this. You know, I'm a farmer, and I think that debate needs to end. We saw it during the programme for government.
But Pip is a farmer and an environmentalist. So,
oh, absolutely.
And you're a farmer and an environmentalist as well. So
yes,
there are
that programme for government, and I right person in the job, wrong programme for government, in my opinion. Like, they've actually set it out in writing that there will be a move towards continuing to work on emission efficiency in that sector. So that tells us there won't be a reduction in overall emissions. And the energy sector, the specialists in that sector, will tell you that if agriculture doesn't reduce its emissions, the energy sector would have to increase their reduction by 15%, and that's not possible. So we're actually looking at a situation where we will not meet those targets. And those targets aren't new in this programme for government. They're something that we've agreed to in a European context already. And all the programme for government does is say they'll do it in 10 years. You can't make a programme for government that supersedes your time in government.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, unfortunately.
We expect it will be 5 years, but we don't know. We'll see how the coalition goes, I suppose. The Dáil is breaking up today. It's the last day of the Dáil. You're looking forward to a few weeks away from here and getting back down to West Cork and relaxing a bit, chilling out a bit?
Yeah, I miss West Cork, miss my dog. But I'll be back up next week. There's a few different things and loads of work to catch up on in the constituency, and definitely some time off.
What will you be doing with your time off?
I think of going to Carrig on Shannon. So I live in a beautiful coastal area, and thought it'd be a good time to experience, you know, some lakes inland instead, lakes. Something a bit different.
Yeah. Less of the Atlantic.
Yeah.
One thing I wanted to mention, and I'm happy for you not to discuss it if you don't want to, but you mentioned on your podcast your relationship with an opposition TD, Christopher O'Sullivan, who's Fianna Fáil TD, for the same constituency. So you both stood in the same constituency. You both got elected. Only three seater at that constituency. So 2 out of 3 and in a relationship, which is quite a story in its own right. You described it as, you know, somebody saying to you when you were a councillor and he was the mayor, I think, and you were going as, you were described as his plus one, even though you were councillor at the time. And somebody said to you, get used to the housewife role. I mean, it goes back to the gender issue, I suppose. But how is it, I suppose, being in a relationship with somebody who's on the opposite side of the house?
Yeah, and I could tell you anecdotes like that all day. The things I've experienced, it's incredible. But I suppose, like, we're used to it. Mm. You know, on Cork County Council, we were there I was essentially an opposition party. It's pretty much the norm. What we weren't prepared for is the amount of media attention that it got. And I suppose I didn't realise.
The Guardian did a piece on it, actually.
Yeah. It was in the New York Post.
I mean, it was on the front of the Irish Examiner, right in your home constituency. Did it help to get both of you elected?
You never know what helps get you elected. It's a strange thing. And it's really hard to tell. At the time, like, a lot of people on the doors were saying to me, I'm not voting for you because you're only Fianna Fáil anyway. You're in a relationship with a Fianna Fáiler. And I was thinking, no one says that to him. And like, if I wanted to just get elected, I would have joined Fianna Fáil. It's much easier. But the presumption that I'm not the one, you know, who's staying true to my values, because I don't know, like, there was all that stuff going on. It was a really challenging time. But we didn't actually think it would happen, that we'd both end up on the ticket, because I'm the only female TD in Cork City and County now. Previous to that, it was a Fianna Fáil TD for Cork South West. So the presumption was there's no way he'd get on the ticket because they struggle so much to meet their gender quotas. Mm. And it was a last minute decision that he was put on.
I just looked at the numbers before coming in, and you got elected before him. You took the second seat and you got more transfers from his running mate. Is that right?
No, it's not. Yeah. So we had a plan in place, because we really didn't want, for either of us getting elected, that the story would become about the relationship. Mm. That was a constant problem throughout, and we'd always, you know, there was never a moment where somebody could have gotten a photo of us. You know, we just had to deal with that and plan for it. And we had the same in the count centre. But we didn't foresee getting elected on the same count, which is what happened. Yeah.
But your numbers were higher. That's what I mean.
His numbers were higher.
Oh, were they? Okay.
Just about.
But did you congratulate each other publicly, at least in the count centre?
No.
Oh, you didn't?
No, we didn't.
Did you text him at least?
Probably. It's such a blur now.
Well done. I'll chat to you later.
yeah, pretty much. But I think, you know, so he always says, you know, like, that we were elected on the same count and he got more votes, and he goes, oh, but, you know, Holly didn't reach the quota. And I say, you know, the difference between 12 years in the council, father a TD, going straight from county mayor into election, and we still got elected on the same count.
Yeah.
So we're a little bit competitive.
I think you win that one, Holly. I definitely think we'll give that one to you. Listen, thank you so much indeed for coming on the podcast today. We look forward to listening to your own podcast when it's back next week. But Social Democrats TD and spokesperson for the Party on Agriculture and Higher Education, Holly Cairns. Thank you very much and enjoy your break.
Thank you, Maggie.
Lovely to have you. So Sandra Hurley, lots, of course, I was saying there to Holly that it is the last day of the dole today. So they're really trying to kind of, like, get through all this legislation quite quickly, aren't they? And they had a few very long days already this week. They're going to take a break now until the 15th of September. And there's been so many, like, big kind of, you know, decisions made and stimulus packages. And then we had at the beginning of this week the education plan to get back to schools. Would you say that they're breathing a sigh of relief, or is the government a bit like, just let this stop and get us out of here for a break at this point?
I think everyone's looking forward to a break. Mm. TDs across everywhere. And it was interesting to see Holly Cairns there in the opposition admitting she was looking forward to a break, because sometimes we have this phony vote, you know, in the Dáil about the recess and people saying we should sit another week. That's not happening, really. It's been pretty frenetic. But I think if you look back at the government, it's been in place for nearly 5 weeks. As you say, they have pushed through an enormous amount of legislation, massive programme there in terms of new laws, a lot of it related to COVID, and two enormous policy positions that they put out there, the stimulus package €5 billion, massive financial firepower, and then the really detailed guidelines on reopening the schools, which they put out earlier this week. It was only a week ago they had the stimulus package, but it has all been obscured by all these gaffes, these bloopers, these kind of own goals that they've had in relation to pay for super juniors, then the pay cut for ministers that wasn't quite really a pay cut. They should have got that sorted, I think, early on. The day the ministers were appointed, they should have said, we're not going to take the rise that we were entitled to and just get it out of the way. Don't let it fester there for a few weeks. Then the PUP stuff, and I think we could get into that later if you want, but there's a lot of legal issues outstanding there. I think they have allowed some really big detailed policies and some quite impressive policies to be obscured by all these gaffes of their own making. And the kind of tawdry governmental stuff, the Mercs and Perks as it's called, all that kind of stuff, which has is really blighting the main work that they're doing.
And do we put it down to, you know, sort of stumbling blocks, you know, just at the beginning of a period of an incredible coalition, which we kind of forget about almost, because although you say we're 5 weeks into it, it feels like we're about 5 years into it already. You know, we've got two big, big parties here and then a smaller party. Are they going to come back, do you think, in September with a fresher, clearer maybe outlook of how to communicate the message better maybe? Is it down to communication?
Partly, I think that's a big part of it. What it looks like is the cabinet, the coalition parties haven't come together yet. And it is a balancing act because each individual party may want to have its wins along the way in terms of something that it's struck down. The Greens seem to have made it known that they vetoed a capital gains tax reduction when it came to the stimulus package. That's sort of playing to their people. And the story happened to come out. It's no good if it doesn't come out and if it doesn't get publicity. So parties need their wins, but they need to come together and coalesce as well and have a coherent message across the board. I mean, an obvious example of that is when it came to the senior ministerial appointments. Mm. Of course, these are in the gifts of the individual party leaders, but it seems that the three leaders didn't coordinate and make sure that they had one person in the West. Maybe the other parties thought that Dara Cleary was going to be there, so they didn't need to worry about it. And then they had this immediately, this problem overshadowing the announcement. So, yeah, they need to coordinate things. Now, we do know that the three party leaders are frequently meeting on the day of cabinet and essentially clearing stuff through them and their main advisors. A lot of the stuff that's going to cabinet, like the memo and the green list, the detail around the schools last week, it's really getting cleared beforehand, so there's less opportunity for rows at cabinet itself.
Which makes sense, because I guess if there was any memo on anything, the minister who would be, you know, in charge of that particular item or whatever would be clearing it first with the Taoiseach of the day. So it makes sense that the three of them are getting together. But I wonder, it'd be interesting to be a fly on the wall, I suppose, in those. Are they very fraught?
Yeah, I think if you look at something like the Green List, in the days before it, there was different messages coming from different sides of the government. Fianna Fáil minister saying one thing, then Leo Varadkar very publicly coming out and intervening. That doesn't work well for the government.
Aisling Kenny's come in now. Aisling, we were talking there about the issues that have come up and have taken the attention off those bigger kind of policy decisions from the government, one of them being pay for the Taoiseach. Let's go through now, because you've been doing some work on the Taoiseach's pay and the ministerial cars and the cost of it all.
Exactly. Well, there was kind of two issues this week, and as Sandra has alluded to it, that one of the issues was top-ups for so-called super junior ministers. Now, the government did a U-turn at the beginning of the week where they basically said that the ministers would give back an extra allowance of €16,000 that the three super junior ministers had been entitled to, which means that they're going to get about €32,000 each top up pay.
About, on the basic salary.
Yeah, exactly. So it's about €10,500 each.
But the basic TD salary, just to remind everyone, is 97, I think
it's about 96 or 97,000. Yeah. But basically, following on from kind of a backlash from this, then this week the government announced a 10% pay cut for the Taoiseach and all his ministers. Now, that was short-lived, Maggie, because the opposition came in and said, actually, this government is going to be earning more than the previous government was. And it's actually transpired that that is true, and it's because that the previous government didn't avail of pay rises that they were entitled to under FEMPI legislation. Now, a spokesperson for the Taoiseach, Micheál Martin, did tell me that he won't be availing of that pay rise either, which is due in October. But again, Maggie, all of this is just music to the ears of opposition politicians, which have accused the government of tokenism and phantom pay cuts.
Mary Lou MacDonald was asking the Taoiseach, Micheál Martin, yesterday a lot of questions about the the leader's allowance that he was getting as an opposition leader, and he had to answer a lot of questions on that. And today, Alan Kelly sort of took up the baton, and he was talking about the ministerial cars issue.
Alan Kelly has been like a dog with a bone with this issue, Maggie. We've heard him in the Dáil over the past few weeks, and it all centres on the fact that Simon Coveney has retained his state car that he was entitled to when he was Taoiseach. Now, under the Fine Gael government, they made a rule that it was only the Taoiseach, the Taoiseach and the Minister for Justice who were entitled to get a state car. Now, the Taoiseach, Dáil Éireann Ócáid, did shed some light on this when questioned about it in the Dáil by Alan Kelly today. He said that the Minister for Foreign Affairs needs a car to go to Northern Ireland. And that has always been the case. And he said when he realised that Simon Coveney would no longer be the Taoiseach in the next government, he can't hear his department. The Department of the Taoiseach contacted the... contacted the Secretary General in the Department of Justice, who then contacted the Garda Commissioner to ask was it suitable for Simon Coveney to hang on to his state car when he was Minister for Foreign Affairs. And the Garda Commissioner, Leo Varadkar, said it was appropriate for him to...
Because
the car
of a security issue? Or
because of a security issue crossing the border. Okay. Now, Alan Kelly, I spoke to him after that Dáil exchange this evening, and he's saying there's constitutional issues with the fact that Leo Varadkar was making decisions for the next government. So this controversy is going to roll on, I think.
Okay, so Alan Kelly's not going to let that go, is he? And then, although the Dáil is wrapping up today, obviously we're still in the middle of dealing with the pandemic and all the issues that have arose out of that. There's still going to be a cabinet meeting next week, Sandra. They're still going to have to make some decisions about phase four and certainly, well, one thing that was brought up a lot today again by some of the regional independent TDs was the reopening of pubs. So that's a decision. Are we expecting to hear something next week from the cabinet?
Yes. Yeah, Leo Varadkar confirmed today that that will be considered by cabinet next Tuesday. Obviously, at the moment, pubs are slated to reopen on August 10th, but what he said today, and he said this before, is there's no guarantee that they will reopen on August 10th. It depends on the public health advice. So they'll wait, they'll get the advice from NPHET. But at this stage, we already know there's a lot of pressure building here. The vintners are out saying they need an early decision on this. Now, next Tuesday, we'll give them about a week to get ready for it. A lot of regional TDs raising it, and I think it would be very difficult really to push it back again. Even Leo Varadkar had to acknowledge it's not just about the huge level of employment, which is important, but also about, you know, the social fabric of a small rural area. I think it's going to be hard to push back, but I think the government will stick to whatever NPHET advises them because they couldn't deviate from that. So it really depends on where the numbers go over the next few days. But that's the one to watch for next week. And then the other thing that'll be bubbling up the whole time across August is schools. Will they all reopen? I think you could see individual schools in some places deciding that they can't get reopened on time, and that's going to be raised by individual TDs. So that'll be something. I think Norma Foley's going to have a very, very busy August.
Baptism of fire for her, but indeed for a lot of the TDs and a lot of the new ministers, I suppose, as well this summer. So that's it from us for today, and indeed, I suppose, really that's it because we're going to take a break as the Dáil is closing as well. So we'll be back once the Dáil comes back, probably around the second week of September. It has been a fascinating year, and we hope you've enjoyed listening. If you do enjoy the podcast, you can subscribe, you can leave a review. But thanks very much for joining us today. From me, Maggie Doyle, Sandra Hurley and Aisling Kenny of our political staff, thanks for listening.